Hello, hello. You're listening to a special edition of Is Good on killradio.org. My guest today is Rich Ferguson. We're going to start by listening to a track from his album, Where I Come From. Then we'll get into some interview and some live stuff. Stick around. It's going to be a great show. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
All the times I stuck something up my nose and couldn't get it out, too. All the times I said underdog instead of under God when reciting the Pledge of Allegiance as a kid, 41, 15 by accident, 26 on purpose. All the times I make prank phone calls to bowling alleys, 59 to bar 68 to some random schmo I picked from the phone book, 197. All the times I've spoken pig Latin, 45. All the times I yelled for some band other than Lynyrd Skynyrd to play Freebird, 6. All the times I yelled for some band other than Lynyrd Skynyrd to play Freebird, 6. Again. All the times I regretted not wearing underwear for fear of suddenly dying in public, 31. All the times I wore swim fins in public, 80. As a joke, 3. In all seriousness, 77. All the times I received the Congressional Medal of Honor, the Nobel Peace Prize, or the James Beard Cooking Award, 0. All the times I kissed someone of the opposite sex, including my mother, 13,601. All the times I woke up in a strange bed and didn't know how I got there, 5. All the times someone pointed a gun at me and threatened my life, 3. All the times I took mushrooms, 7. Acid, 4. Smoked pot, 32. All the times I witnessed dogs get locked up while having sex, 2. All the times I accidentally witnessed my parents having sex, 2. Again. All the times I had dreams of losing hair, 44, losing teeth, 33, being naked in public, 42, being late for a test, 51. Flying, 83. All the times I lied to my parents, 3,018. All the times I think they lied to me, 12,644. All the times I was overdressed for an occasion, 5. Underdressed, 69. All the times I sold something door to door, Fuller Brush, 1. Newspapers, 4. Greeting cards, 6. All the times I lost my car keys, 10. Money, 33. Drugs, I can't remember. I can't remember. I pulled off insect wings for no good reason other than curiosity, stupidity, or cruelty, 15. All the times I cheated on a test, 23, on a girl, 2. All the times I used God's name in vain, 258. All the times he's used my name in vain, 0. I think. Times I murdered strangers in my thoughts, 541, loved ones, 3,567. All the times I shoplifted, 8, got caught, 2. All the times I stayed up all night just so that I could see the sunrise, 45. All the times I bought a product that said I'd either get rich, gain confidence, find God, zap pimples, attract girls, 10,316. All the times I wished I had more time. Many times, way, way too many times, way, way too many times.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Rich Ferguson. How's it going, man?
Hey, John. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thanks for coming in. First things first, let's talk about this sort of interesting world that you are in of the spoken word artist. You know, that it blurs the line between, like we heard in that last track, there's obviously a rock influence. There's obviously a hip-hop influence.
Yeah.
There's also kind of a almost a King Missile-like, pop culture referential influence.
Actually, King Missile, I actually performed once in New York with the guy from King Missile. I can't remember,
John S. Hall,
yeah. John S. Hall, man. I love that guy. I've been in bands for some years, singing, doing the whole band thing, playing drums, this and that. So music is definitely something that's important to me and a part of me. And while I was in bands, I was also doing spoken word. And at certain points, it was almost a little fractured. Like I would go out and do a spoken word show, and that would be one thing. And then I would go do a band show, and that would be a separate thing. And then I just found myself over the years wanting to try to incorporate the two and kind of blur the line between what is a song and what is spoken word, and kind of explore that whole world.
Was that kind of a challenge in the sense that...
It still is a challenge.
Do you find that musicians are, resist understanding yes. what the spoken word concept is like, and that poets resist understanding what the musician side
yeah,
of it is
I mean,
like?
Yeah, I mean, that is a great point. You touch on a really interesting point that still, that I'm still exploring. I find that in certain, let's say, poetry venues, bringing musicians in and stuff sometimes, isn't kosher. It's just like sometimes I just have to go in there by myself. Mm-hmm. And when I go into clubs, sometimes it's hard to get a show because some people are really cool with it and get it. And then there are some people that are just like, I don't know what you're doing here. And, I'm not quite sure what this is.
If people say, like, is it rap or what?
Yeah, some people are like, some people are like, is it rap? Is it music? And some people are just like really cool. I played a show at Tangier here in L.A. like a week ago, and the sound guy came up to me after the show, and he was like, I have never seen anything like this before. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I got to tell you, man, it was great.
And
I love that sort of thing.
And that's amazing, and that's feedback.
Yeah, and that's a great compliment. Where he's like, okay, look, I'm being honest. I don't quite know what I just saw, but it was cool. As far as musicians go, I've definitely, had my run of like, doing the whole recycler classified route and finding guys and trying to explain what I do, and some would get it and some wouldn't. I feel very blessed right now that I'm surrounded by a group of friends and musicians who really do get it. People on the CD, Butch, who started the Eels, who's playing with Lucinda Williams now. He's an amazing drummer. Such a great heart. He totally gets it. He's got my back. Paul Garrison, who played guitar on the CD and who also created the backing tracks that I'll do for some of the live stuff, he totally gets it. We do a lot of live performing together. Jeremy Toback, who without him I probably wouldn't even have that CD. He played bass on the CD. Jeremy's done a lot of great stuff. He had a solo deal for a while with RCA and played for a while with Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam, did a project called Brad. And and Rich Mangiacaro, who I play with live now. But basically, yeah, I mean, now I feel that I'm in a position where I don't have to explain myself too much to musicians. The ones that are around me get it.
And having them really understand what you do, that must help the writing process for you as well, because you can like sort of, write your piece and know that you can trust your musicians to kind of, add the music to it that's going to bring those words out.
Yeah, that is totally the case. In fact, with Butch, who plays drums, it's funny, but what he always says to me when we're starting a new thing is like, I want to see the words, and for a drummer, even, you know, it's really interesting, you know, but that's the way Butch is, you know. He's just like, you know, he's just like, okay, I want to see what you're talking about, and we have to really sort of take this piece apart so we can figure out how to build it, you know, places where we need to build, places where we need to drop out, and this and that. So yeah, they're very sensitive to what's going on.
Cool. Well, if you're ready, let's jump into a live song.
Sure, yeah. And like I said...
So you brought in some backing tracks on a CD?
Yeah, that were created by Paul Garrison, who I play with quite a bit. And the first one we're going to do is something called Fast.
All right. Cool. Whenever you're ready. My guest is Rich Ferguson. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
She tells me to go fast, fast like Evel Knievel, fast like Rubber Room Down to Camarillo. She says go fast, fast like when I drive or how I should live and die in LA. And I say, okay, I can do that. I can go from zero to infinite bliss in seconds flat. Here I say, how's that? But she doesn't speak. She's just looking at me like I'm on trial. Yeah, she's got one hand on my pulse and the other on the radio dial, making everything go louder, wilder, faster, still faster, so fast. And that's when she says, yeah, now you're getting the hang of it. Now you're speeding us toward pure adrenaline. And I say, listen, right now, I'm that piston, that constant motion, that spark of devotion and tension, that small look and listen into the engine of your everything. And she says, everything, huh? And I say, yeah, everything. And she says, well, tell me something first. What if you were more than regret, more than a firing squad, last cigarette? What if you were more than stone, more than alone? What if you were more than me, more than sin, more than your own skin? To me, that would be everything. At least for a little while, she says. And I say, yeah, I can be that. I can be your everything. At least for a little while. She says, well, why don't we have Mr. Armageddon mix us a few strong drinks and we'll talk about that. We'll have that person, the person you call, where everything we say is carved into karma's walls to live on. To either mend or tear down those walls of our future, Babylon. But in the meantime, she says, let's just keep going fast. And so I drive, and so I live and die, and so I tear down those walls to hear her make that person to person call to me, telling me to go faster, telling me to go faster, telling me to go so fast, so fast, so fast.
That was awesome. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Rich Ferguson. You know what I really like about that is how... musically, it's a really dynamic piece. You know,
yes,
a lot of those, a lot of what is often associated with spoken word pieces is you just have a beat in the background that someone could throw in at any moment, and then you have the person's poetry on top of that. And if they match up, then you feel really good about it. And if they don't, well, that's just spoken word. That's the way it is. You know,
that's the nature of the beat.
But you know, you're sort of telling a story up there on the mic, and then at the same time, the music is also telling a story. It's not just a loop. You know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's a great thing about Paul Garrison. You know, like he created the track, and a lot of that just had to do with us going back and forth and talking about the piece and. Talking about where we wanted, you know, sort of those peaks and valleys, and Paul's pretty amazing like that, just being able to make things very dynamic, and it really works well live too, Because Paul runs all the tracks through a laptop, and he's got all these, I mean, he's like a mad scientist.
He's got like effects pads
he's got
and things
effects
like that.
Pads and chaos pads and like doing all kinds of tripped out stuff. Sometimes he'll play live guitar against all of that. And it's pretty, I mean, even it's funny because we were doing a show at the Echo some time ago, and I had a friend there who was standing behind two people who had never seen us before. And after the show, my friend said, yeah, you know, just listening to their conversation, you know, one of the people watching us was like, yeah, you know, I was like watching that spoken word guy for a while. But then all I wanted to do was just like watch that guitarist guy for a while. You know, cause, so we're both like really, you know, visually dynamic when we perform together. It's pretty fun.
And I guess that's got to be pretty important too, because a lot of the bad rap that comes with spoken word artists or people who do poetry is that it's just the words, you know, and sounds like you've put some effort into making a show out of it, a presentation out of it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm still trying to figure that one out too, but totally, you know, it just, yeah, it's very important to me.
Tell me a little bit, what are some of the things that you like to write about and the sort of perspectives that you're coming from in your work?
It's pretty dynamic. I mean, it's pretty dynamic. It's pretty diverse. Like with the first track you play from the CD, All the Times, for example, that was just the inspiration for something like that was I was just trying to think about my life and all the things I had done and all the things I hadn't done and the things that I had done, how many times I'd done those things in my life. So I just found myself like making a list, you know, and some are pretty close to the truth. You know, some of those numbers are pretty close to what I can remember. And then some I just kind of had to like give the best guess possible. There's a piece on the CD that when we play another track from it that I'll do, the LA Book of the Dead. That one, for example, was the inspiration for that. I was reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead. You know, it's kind of a manual to like take you from this life into the afterlife. And I was thinking about Los Angeles a little at the time and how there's so many different sections to Los Angeles. And what if you chose to live your life, your afterlife in Los Angeles, you know, and depending on where you chose, what part of LA you chose to live, you know, your afterlife in, that afterlife could look very different.
Everything might be in Korean, for example.
Exactly.
If you live in my neighborhood.
Right. So, you know, so I guess it's pretty diverse what I write about. I guess actually, to be completely honest, the piece that I just did live, Fast, the inspiration for that was Paul had a track that he called Fast. That was the title of it. And I said to him, I'll have to write something called Fast. I like that title, Fast. And so that one was just purely based on a title.
Interesting.
I just like the idea of going fast. And so,
would you say that most of your work is self-reflective, or do you also have some like you know, message-oriented material?
It's funny you should say that. I have a friend who's constantly giving me shit about that. Or he's a friend of mine, Dwayne. He, you know, he's like, I hate these poets. All they do is write about themselves. You know, I mean, to some degree, I guess a bit of what I do is inspired by maybe things that I'm going through, but I really do try, even within those pieces, I try to reflect outward. Also, like the LA Book of the Dead piece, that's definitely there's really not much of me in that piece. It's more reflecting outward. And I guess, you know, for me, the line that I walk with that is, you know, sometimes I think there's a real art to conveying a really strong, a really meaningful social message, because some people can do it really well, and then there are those people that are just like, get off your soapbox and shut the hell up.
You're always running that risk of being preachy, and that's when you lose your audience. Yeah. You have to kind of almost they have negative connotations, but the word almost con and manipulate your audience into accepting your message without them being aware of it.
Yeah, exactly. I sometimes feel that I couch ideas or little things within a piece, and sometimes they'll just fly right by, because some pieces I do kind of can be really fast. You know, when I speak them, they can go by fast. So sometimes they'll just be like a little message within, and it's there and it's gone. But nonetheless, like some subliminal seduction or something.
Well, a lot of the good message-oriented bands do it by making really good music. So you have their fans are really into the music, and they're not really consciously aware that they're also receiving these verbal messages from the lyrics.
Did
you know?
He just tell me to buy Gap jeans? Like, I don't know, man, but that fucking there's guitar definitely, line is great.
I know, there's definitely an evil side to that as well, yeah.
Yeah, no, but... And yeah, so I mean that was a great question, but I do try to not make it all about myself because that can get really tired also. And that, you know, and that was the thing with rap, there are some rappers that do it really well, and Michael Frante for one, who I really enjoy, but who, you know, have a message and deliver it really well and thoughtful. And then there were just some of those rappers that just like, it's just like, stop talking about yourself, damn it. You know, just say something else other than, you know, something about you. So
I think there should be a moratorium on the word yeah. I think if you use the word yeah more than four times in a song, then there should be some sort of like ethical code violation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But that's a difficult thing. I mean, the world of do you consider yourself to be a part of the world of hip hop?
No. I enjoy listening to certain hip hop, Nas and some other people, but no, I don't consider myself hip hop. One or two of the tracks on the CD have maybe certain musical backing tracks that could be considered.
It's funny. It's a Freudian slip.
It's exactly trap. Tracks that could be considered hip hop-ish. Mm-hmm. But I don't really consider myself rap and really wouldn't even want to try to go there just because I think, some people would just be like, what the hell are you trying to do? You're not a rapper. And so I just try to do what I do. And
let people call it whatever they end up calling it.
Let people whatever they want to call it. And some people have said, yeah, it's kind of like rap. It's like, okay, cool. For you, it's kind of like rap. And that's fine. But I wouldn't want to try to be something that I'm not.
Let's on that note, let's listen to another track from this CD where I come from.
L.A. Book of the Dead. It might be.
All right.
Yeah.
And where can people get this CD?
They can go directly to CD Baby, and I think it's like CD Baby's / Rich Ferguson. I think it's also on iTunes. They can also go to my MySpace page, MySpace/ Rich Ferguson, and there's a link, I think, to CD Baby from there also. So basically, it's either through iTunes or CD Baby.
And is your MySpace, is that the place to go for the most up-to-date info on your gigs and everything that you're doing right now?
Exactly.
All right, cool. Let's listen to this track, LA Book of the Dead, off of Where I Come From by Rich Ferguson. And we'll be right back in a few minutes with some more live stuff. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
O son and daughter of noble birth, now the time has come for you to seek a path. As your breath stops, visions will appear. And while on this journey from life into death, if you should find yourself calling out, O Lord of great compassion, am I beautiful enough? Am I wearing the right clothes? Do I have the right connections to get me into where I'm going? To these concerns I say, do not worry. Release your fears, for soon you will find experience to be the greatest teacher and healer. And while there will be those of you who find yourself floating holy in Beverly Center, Buddha Realm Beauty, know that there will be others left shuddering cold turkey in a metaphysical MacArthur Park, strung out on doubt as you try to re-enter your own body or the body of another again. And again, please understand, this is not an option. This is the type of suffering that must be endured. Oh, son and daughter of noble birth, if you've done wrong, you can't go trading up karma like baseball cards, thinking you're gonna end up with that prize, Tommy Lasorda, 1988 Dodgers World Series winner. So if you've lied, cheated, looted, committed a drive-by shooting, screwed your best friend's girlfriend, boyfriend, left your cell phone on during a yoga class or movie, now's the time. Your conscience is collecting up those sins and numbering them on the bones of a South LA body count. Oh, son and daughter of noble birth, as you move through these afterlife streets, you will encounter many dreams and dead ends. At the blink of a camera eye, you can sell a script for $1 million or lose your soul like William Faulkner in Hollywood. With a name change in Jewel Turban, you can reinvent yourself like Corla Pandit or have your own life taken by any Manson, Menendez, or Night Stalker. Demons and protective spirits will take many forms. They'll be moon-eyed sirens of overnight success, singing fleeting love songs with Angeline in three-part harmony. They'll be mandala-faced day laborers with bent backs and calloused hands, standing at freeway off-ramps shouting, Espiritu d'Azuka, sugar spirit, dame tu besos de sangre dulce, give me your sweet blood kisses. Give me your sweet blood kisses. Oh, son and daughter of noble birth, in this crosstown journey as you approach the eternally glittering womb of the 101, please keep an open mind as you meditate on the connections you need to make to ensure yourself a safe passage to that area of the city where you would most like to be reborn. If it's the valley, know that it has the tempting allure of Krispy Kreme in the porn industry, but otherwise it's bland, flat, has way too many mini malls, and looks like the worst parts of New Jersey. If it's the west side, know that Venice has beats, hippies, love and drunken frenzy, and Mother Ocean's deep embrace, but the rents are incredibly expensive, and Santa Monica's Third Street promenade is really Dante's Inferno. If it's Beverly Hills, no, there's plenty of room at the Hotel California, but you could still end up living in a mansion with a Guatemalan housekeeper named Lucia, who you will trust to raise your children, but will still only pay minimum wage. If it's West Hollywood, no, there are buff, beautiful fags and drag queens, but restricted parking for those with more than 6% body fat. If it's Hollywood, no, the hills are still filled with the rebellious spirit of James Dean and Timothy Leary, but that down on the boulevard, they've Disneyfied to stay alive. Disneyfied to stay alive. If it's Silver Lake, no, there's great Cuban coffee, artists, and rock bands, but the prices are skyrocketing on account of the invading West Siders proclaiming themselves reborn again East Siders. If it's downtown, no, there's artist lofts, Olivera Street, the Staples Center, and the Lakers, but that after business hours, the whole place changes from a thriving Calcutta into a ghost town. And finally, if you should decide to be reborn anywhere near the Rampart District,
know that even after all these years,
a renegade police officer could still decide to kill you without the slightest provocation, and that action alone could have you being reborn out in the valley, whether you liked it or not. And if after all this you still have your doubts about where to reside in this afterlife LA, know that as Lord Stravinsky once said, the only way to escape LA is to be in LA. So before your last breath checkout, be sure to check out your heart's true calling. If it's singing cross party lines, breaking heights and stereotypes, that's just fine. You can be a non-rapping Caucasian in Leimert Park, a non-burrito eating African American in East LA, a non-house cleaning Chicano in the Palisades. But if somewhere along your spiritual journey you consult your Thomas guide to find it, maybe you missed your last exit to Status Town, well, hey, don't let it get you down. More than any Malibu beach house, you need to set your sights on that transference, the pure space, the place where you can feel total release. And even though you are tired from your many journeys, you must still find the energy to transform yourself into an Echo Park Lake lotus flower that can be offered to the Buddha of complete joy. For this is the Buddha that will keep you moving toward the lights. The spotlight slashing your afterlife skies. These are the lights calling you to the greatest premiere of all, the eternal party where you are the star, where you are walking down the red carpet, where you are smiling and waving to the cameras, and we, as your adoring friends and fans, can't help but to hang on to your every word, your every action, wondering what you will say and where you will go next. you will go next. Where you will go next.
You're listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org. My guest is Rich Ferguson, and we're just hanging out listening to a track from the album Where I Come From. And you're saying this album was produced and engineered by Herb Graham?
Yeah, Herb Graham Jr. I wanted to be sure to say thanks to Herb. Herb was great. Herb has worked with some pretty great people. He worked on John Cale's last CD and he's done some work with Macy Gray and stuff, but Herb was another one of those people that got it, you know, and was really influential in working with me, you know, figuring out tracks, you know, beats and different tracks to use behind the words. And, you know, because part of the CD is live musicians, like, you know, when Butch was playing drums and Paul guitar and Jeremy on bass. So there was part of that when we went into the studio and did that. But then for some of the other tracks, that was, you know, working one-on-one with Herb to figure out different beats and stuff.
So, now, yeah. How did this love affair with words start for you? And when you first started, you know, putting words together and making, you know, works out of them?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the origins go back to, you know, when I was a little boy, I always loved reading. The way my mom tells it, when I was, you know, a little boy, before I could even really, you know, before I was reading books even, we were on a trip once, a long road trip, and we passed a billboard or something, and I, like, read it to them. Like, I read the words out loud to the billboard, which is funny, actually, because in college I studied advertising and public relations, so that's kind of ironic. But, So through the years, I've always, you know, just loved words. But really, when I graduated Rutgers College in New Jersey, and then I came out to California to play music and such. But when I landed in San Francisco, one of the first places I went was City Lights Bookstore and picked up a copy of Gregory Corso's Gasoline. And from there, it was just like, I want to write poetry. You know,
nice.
It's just like, and so pretty much from there, I started going to poetry readings, and, you know, it was at one poetry reading that I met this guitar player that I ended up later forming a band with and this and that. But yeah, the love of words and the love of performing poetry, writing poetry really kicked in high gear when I moved to San Francisco.
And have you seen your style of poetry writing evolve with time? Is there any sort of major changes that you're aware of?
Yes.
In the way that you write?
Yes. Yeah. And you're asking all these good questions. It's great, John. When I was living in San Francisco, a lot of what I wrote was kind of what I would sort of consider my kind of ranting phase and just, you know, going on about this or that. It's funny, when I moved to LA, I noticed a shift in that I felt more geared towards telling stories. And now I kind of, so I went through a phase where that was, where pieces almost sounded like monologues or something, where I was telling a story, or even like inhabiting a character. I had pieces where it was just like I became a character telling a story. And now I think where I am, it kind of goes between the two, but also every once in a while I find myself writing words that even harken back to like song lyric kind of things. Something like, you know, like one of my favorite writers is Langston Hughes, and I love, and also another writer, Gene Toomer, but they were like back in the like the Harlem Renaissance period. And something that I really loved about those guys was that if you look at some of their work, and it's almost, you know, it's like a song. It's like a blues song or something. You know, you've got your verses, but then you've got this chorus that they'll keep coming back to. Mm-hmm. And that's what some of my work is like also, you know, just basically like, you know, songish structure.
Was there a time that you considered, you know, going straight up lyrical with it and singing, or is that something you always knew that you wanted to...
Well, I've actually been in bands, so I've gone between being, you know, just a drummer or drummer and lead singing to just lead singing. And so, and then at one point I picked up a guitar so that I could write songs. So I've done the sort of straight on singing route. And like with some of these backing tracks and stuff, there's sort of some background vocal stuff, whatever. And that's me sort of doing the background stuff. Live these days I speak more than sing, but every once in a while I'll have like there might be a chorus within a piece that I mm-hmm. sing and then go back to a verse thing where I sort of speak.
Interesting. You ready for another live song?
Sure.
What are we gonna do now?
We are going to do something called Nightlight Jesus, and this is one that would sort of be in a sort of word song kind of structure. Yeah.
All right, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Rich Ferguson.
On nights like these, I go to her. Tell her things are getting way too shaky down in DT City. Can't tell whether that's the sound of traffic or voices in my head. Don't know whether I'm sick or fine. Can't tell whether I'm crossing the black cat's path or it's crossing mine. She says, don't worry, boy, I'll show you how to brutalize instead of brutalize. Just start by looking into these crystal ball eyes. See that one day soon your own evolution will figure out a way to counter your inner fascist revolution. And I said, yeah, I think I heard about something like that. Like how peace is trying to make a comeback. But she said, be careful, boy, because the kind of peace some people selling these days, the only thing you can buy it with is blood money. When I'm down in the hole, she shows me the way to go. Yeah, she'll lead me home. She's got a night like Jesus for a soul. And I say, feels like I've been living in the gutters of fist cities. Got to the point where even a beatdown's looking pretty. Seems like the clouds are fueled by ghosts and gasoline. And she says, boy, for too long you've been double jinxed, stoned as a fiend. You gotta learn how to have a little fun. Just remember, some have 20/20 vision while mine is 20 gauge shotgun. And when I'm down in the hole, she shows me the way to go. Yeah, she'll lead me home. She's got a night like Jesus for a soul. Night like Jesus. And when I'm down in the hole, she shows me the way to go. She'll lead me home. Got a night like Jesus for a soul. She'll lead me home. She'll lead me home.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Rich Ferguson.
I was trying to watch my use of It's funny when you said earlier about if anyone uses the word yeah more than four times in a minute. At a certain point, I realized, oh man, I'm saying yeah a couple of times in this. I better really try to
you
watch
it. You just can't say it over and over in a row. It's like, is
yeah,
the...
yeah.
Again, with the music, I mean, that sound, I mean, it's totally different from anything else on the album. It's really dynamic. It changes, and you're telling the story. I mean, there's almost They had this that song had this real science fiction vibe to it, right, it seemed. Right, you know? It's right. Pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. These are Paul and I started creating some of these tracks after the CD had been completed and everything. So yeah, definitely some of the stuff that Paul and I have done as a duo has been a little bit of a departure from some of the things on the CD, which is I think is great. I mean, I'm totally, and it's funny because depending on sometimes who I collaborate with, you know, it can just be this whole other thing. And I love that. I love like what can come out of working with different musicians and such.
Well, I would imagine you have a sort of sense of musical freedom because you're dealing with words, and so yeah, you can base the music around what you want your work to be, instead of like, oh, I sing this style, and then yeah, you have to always do music that goes with that style of singing. You
yeah,
know?
And it's really kind of an interesting, you know, or in a best case scenario, it's a interesting back and forth dialogue, because maybe a musician already has a certain track or an idea for something, and I think, wow, that's, I really like that. That speaks to me in a certain way, and I might end up writing something that specifically for that piece of music because it just spoke to me in a certain way, or the other way around, where I have some words and, you know, Paul or someone might say, oh, wow, let me create something that's given me an idea. Or it could just be one of those things where we just kind of go back and forth and sort of hash it out between the two of us and end up with something.
When you get inspired to write a new song, does it happen all of a sudden, like you're walking down the street and suddenly you get just hit over the head with a phrase and you got to rush and find a napkin to write it down on? Or is this something you set aside a time for and you're like, I'm going to write, and you know, work on it that way?
Both. I mean, I always carry a journal around with me, so I'm constantly writing down ideas. As far as musical ideas go, I've gone through phases where I've carried around a tape recorder and would sort of hum different ideas into it. Lately, I haven't been going around with it, but what I do now is if I get a musical idea, I'll just call my voicemail and,
oh, that's a good
and
idea.
leave it on my voicemail. So, yeah.
Now, let's talk about performing live. What was it like the sort of first time you got up there doing an act, sort of like I know it started with poetry readings.
Sure, right.
And then when you expanded on that and added the musical element to it, what was that like, that first time you were like, I'm Rich Ferguson, this is what I do?
Oh man, the first thing is sort of embarrassing. The first thing that comes to mind, this band that I had in San Francisco, it was mostly a musical band, and I had this one spoken word piece called Tammy's on the Telephone, where this girl's spending all of her time on the telephone, and she's so oblivious that some guy ends up breaking to her house and like strangling her with her own phone cord and killing her. But anyway, but it was kind of couched in this sort of happy rap sort of thing. But we were playing at like San Jose State or something in the bar or whatever. And when we were doing our musical stuff, everyone was like, you know, pretty much into it. But then like when I started doing this rap thing, like people just didn't really know what to make of it. And there was this one table in particular where there was this group of, you know, four really loud people. And at a certain point, I was just like, okay, whatever, you know, I'm just trying to do this thing, and just can't you be more respectful? And they just kept talking really loud, and then finally, I just went over to them, and they had a basket of peanuts on their table, and I just started picking up the peanuts and kind of like tossing them in their faces and just saying, "Can't you please be quiet?" You know, and they were stunned. I was kind of stunned too that I'd even do such a thing, but I got their attention, and I was able to continue. But I've progressed. I've matured and progressed since those days.
Well, that's one way of connecting with your audience. What about the other way of connecting? Like, how do you know when you've had a really good show? Can you sort of get a vibe from the audience that they're really getting you?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like what I said before about that sound guy coming up to me and just being really vocal, like, you know, I'll just be honest with you, I'm not quite sure what that was, but I thought it was really cool. And some people are just, you know, will just come up to me and say, you know, man, that's so cool. I don't really see much stuff like that. And also, you know, when you're performing, or, you know, when I'm performing, I can kind of read the room. I can tell, like, the people that are into it and the people that kind of, this isn't really their cup of tea or whatever. And you know what? That's cool. And I think in the beginning, you know, it kind of threw me, like, oh, they're not into it, I've got to, like, yell out, or I've got to do, like, this or that. And then it's just like, ultimately, it's just like, some people are going to, like, really be into this, and some people are going to maybe not be so into it. And I just need to, like, speak to those people who are, I just have to key into those people that are, like, into it. And I get better at that, you know.
Is there a kind of venue that you think really resonates the best with your kind of performance, like a small cafe versus a big rock arena?
Well, it varies. I mean, when I perform by myself, places like Beyond Baroque or whatever like that here in LA, kind of poetry venues work well. But, you know, it's also, I've also just myself gotten up on big stages between bands and stuff and love that also, and feel very confident in just getting up there by myself and doing one of my pieces. These days, you know, I just love so much just bringing that musical influence back in. And so I think to some degree there are places that I can play and places that I can't play, just because I'm kind of going, I want to sort of travel that road a little bit more. So to some degree, it's clubs. But then again, like we mentioned before, you know, there are some clubs that get it and some clubs that are like, pass.
And yeah, and you kind of have to, I guess you end up taking a lot of risks then, you know, performing in places where you don't know until you're up there on stage whether or not it's going to work.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's you're right on about that. And I think at that point, it just comes down to a matter of conviction and just like saying, okay, I'm really into this, and hopefully you'll be into it too.
Right. And the audience can smell fear too, right? So you have to really go
exactly,
after it.
Yeah.
Let's listen to another track from your CD. What do you recommend?
Cool. Why don't we go for Every Now Is Everything?
All right. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. We'll be right back with more Rich Ferguson, so stick around.
I come from never sleeping rust, from an astrology of kicked up dust, from tantric turntables playing the soul phonic sounds of Motown. Let me hear you get down, from rock and roll uranium 238, which is made up of 92 protons of sweat and 146 neutrons of turn it up to 10. I come from a double backflip, from one of Cary Grant's acid trips, from a Steve McQueen car chase in the Mona Lisa's face. I come from you sleeping quietly in bed, from the X on Manson's forehead. I come from the slow inhale of opium moments winding through time, connecting to places deep inside us that say, every moment is a breath, every breath is a word, every word is love, every love is now, every now. Everything. I come from a dense lexicon of dog logic, from the gestalt of the Rock of Gibraltar, from I like what you do but don't quit your day job. I come from the smell of gasoline, from the spark of fire, from a triple ohm choir, from three hits of White Crosses at a Kiss concert circa the Love Gun tour. I come from, are you sure we should be doing this? From the Grim Reaper's belly button lint, from babbling Scrabble pieces in an abracadabra thesis, from the unearthly sounds of Holstein cows playing Twister, from a blister on the sun, a fox on the run. I come from the vibration of bells, bells that sing down to places deep inside us, to places deep inside us that say, every moment is a breath,
breath is a word. Every word is love. Every love is now. Every now is everything.
I come from hummingbird beer burps, from evening's first song in a cricket church. I come from, what part of no do you not understand? From, hey Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand? I come from absent kisses and Cadillac Ranch blisses, from a knife in the chest to stop, you're under arrest. From the first breath of first life, from a pillow fight, from Diddy fire, six shots or only five. I come from the language of honeybees, from a bee's knees, and if you please, I come from a horse in the blood that knows no fear, a horse in the blood that gallops full on, wild and wanting into those places deep inside us that say,
every moment is a breath, every breath is a word, every word is love, every love is now, every now is everything, is everything, is everything, is everything.
And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org, hanging out with Rich Ferguson, myspace.com/richferguson. And we're listening to some tracks from Where I Come From. You said this is available CD Baby and
CD
iTunes.
CD Baby, iTunes, and or if you see me walking on the street, I might have a copy and I could just give it to you.
My guess is that you probably never stop writing. Like, as soon as you finish this album, you probably already had several other songs in the works for next one. Are you working on a new album now?
Well, I definitely have enough pieces to do another album, so then it just becomes a matter of just getting everything in line to get back into the studio again to do it. But yeah, I'm doing that and also trying to finish a novel, so
wow.
You know, it's like
got more words than you know what to do with, huh?
Sometimes, yeah.
As a spoken word artist, I would imagine that the recording process is a bit unique. I mean, so much of what you've done has to do with being live on stage and connecting with an audience in the moment. Describe for me, if you can, your experience, you know, doing your spoken word in the recording studio and trying to lay it down in the perfect way without the benefit of having the audience there.
Well, that's, yeah, good. Again, another good question. When we did this particular CD, you know, I had enough money for one day in the studio, and basically, I just, you know, surrounded myself with musicians who I just completely trusted. You know, Jeremy was playing bass, Butch was doing the drums, and Paul playing guitar. And basically what I did was, my pre-production was thinking about the pieces that I was going to be doing in the studio and thinking about music that would kind of emulate to some degree the style that I wanted for each track. And so basically what I did was I just went through all my CDs and collected different songs from different bands, you know, the pick, like for all the times that you know, I brought in like a Pixies song or something, you know, and just said, okay, I want, you know. And so basically I would just, like, it literally happened like this. I, let's say we were getting ready to record All the Times, I popped in a Pixies song and said, okay, I don't want you guys to play this, but I want you to play something that's kind
of
like
the spirit,
in
of,
the
it.
Spirit of this. And, you know, because I'd been lucky enough to surround myself with such a great group of guys, it would just be like, I'd pop in the CD, it would play for 30 seconds. They were like, okay, let's go. And then, like, it was just like, literally, it was just like, doo-doo. They were like, okay, what key are we going to play in? Okay, good, let's go. And it was just, it was that easy. And, you know, because before we went in, I was thinking, like, oh my God, what happens if we don't get everything done? Because we had like 7 or 8 things to do that day. And I was like, what if we don't get it done? And then once we got in there, it was just like, it was just so easy. And then it was just a matter of me just putting the words on top of that, and we situated it as such where I could kind of watch them and they could sort of see me, and that was sort of enough to be able to inspire me. And I mean,
so
I was
still
just,
had an audience.
I still had an audience, yeah. And plus, I was just so excited. I was just so excited to be doing a CD that even that alone was enough to, yeah. So it was great. And then it basically went to, you know, again, that just kind of showing how great Herb is, you know. We basically just took all that rough material, and then a lot of it really came down to producing it and mixing it, you know, and how we wanted the music to come in and go out and this and that. And so there was a lot that was involved in the mixing phase too. That was actually what took the longest time, just trying to put everything together.
Well, if you're ready, I'd like to get one more live song out of you.
Yeah. And it's funny, earlier you were asking me my inspiration, and the inspiration for this one came from a personal experience. And as the experience was happening to me in real time, I just thought to myself, this is perhaps one of the worst, most humiliating, embarrassing things that's ever happened to me in my life. And I thought, I will never be able to like tell anyone about this, and I can't believe this is going on. And then even after the fact, I was just like, I can't tell anyone about this. And then more time passed, and then I thought, I've got to write
about
this.
It's going to make a great song.
It's going to make a great spoken word piece, yeah. So it's called I'm Becoming an Urban Legend.
All right. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Rich Ferguson. Whenever you're ready, Rich.
Becoming an urban legend is simple. When you want to become an urban legend, you start out by sitting at home alone on a Friday night, doing your best to not think about all your friends out roaming the city, clubbing, drugging, strolling through art galleries featuring earth tone paintings or famous sports photographs such as Mary Lou Retton in the 1984 Olympics. Friends laughing, learning, while you, the still not yet an urban legend, sit at home alone on a Friday night, feeling like a bottom feeder down at the dark depths of the popularity food chain, reading a book you've already read 5 times, doing your best to not think about all those friends out roaming the city, having a much better time than you as you change out of your clothes, wash your face, brush your teeth, dig a Q-tip through your ear, recalling the countless occasions when parents, priests, doctors, teachers, all of them telling you it's not a good idea to stick a Q-tip too far on your ear because you could burst your eardrum or any number of other god-awful health risks. But there you are alone on a Friday night, still not yet an urban legend, digging a Q-tip, which is not really an official Q-tip, more like some flimsy generic cotton swab you bought at the 99-cent store to save a few cents. Digging it in your ear, realizing this generic cotton swab in the ear feeling is the closest thing you're going to get to any excitement on a Friday night, and you relish in this generic cotton swab in the ear feeling until suddenly it changes. Becomes a harsh cocktail straw in the ear feeling. And now you realize you're not hearing so well out of that ear anymore, like everything's underground, underwater. And when you pull the generic cotton swab from your ear, you see the cotton tip is no longer there, but now stuck in your ear. And not thinking clearly, you stick a finger in to dig it out, but that only pushes the cotton further into your ear canal. So you grab a pair of tweezers to pull it out, but you can't turn your head around far enough. Definitely not like Linda Blair in The Exorcist to examine your inner ear in the bathroom mirror. So you drop the tweezers, run through your apartment, jump up and down, praying the cotton swab will simply dislodge from your ear, fall to earth like an object from one of Newton's gravity experiments. But when it doesn't happen, you pick up the phone and start calling friends. But not all your friends. Only the one or two really close ones that won't laugh their asses off when they hear what's happened to you. But when you call their friends, all you get are the answering machines because, of course, it's a Friday night and they're all out engaged in much more productive, provocative activities than getting generic cotton swabs stuck in their ears. And as crazy as it seems, you now realize you're going to have to drive yourself to the emergency room to get this little piece of cotton removed from your ear. So you put your clothes back on, jump in your car, get out on the freeway as you watch all the cars around you, how their headlights, taillights float ecstatically through the ether of Friday night, let's get it on electricity as you, the still not yet an urban legend, drive yourself to the emergency room. And when you get there, when you tell the white smocked attendant why you're there, she gives you a look. The look that says, I hope this isn't how you spend all your Friday nights. The look that says, I want to laugh at you, pity you, spit on you for being here at almost midnight on a Friday night with a generic cotton swab stuck in your ear when there are much more serious cases like gunshot wounds, stabbings, car accidents for me to deal with. Then the white smocked attendant has you take a seat until another white smocked attendant comes for you. Some guy looking like David Bowie. Except if David Bowie were a short, well-tanned, bottle-blonde Filipino with a slight limp. See, you go with this different David Bowie, dreaming of diamond dogs and scary monsters as you follow him down winding, snaking, fluorescent lit corridors as code blues and other commands crackle over the intercom. And when you get into the bowels of the emergency room where there are all doctors, nurses rushing around treating patients in flimsy blue curtained off rooms, the short, well-tanned, bottle-blonde Filipino David Bowie with a slight limp puts you into your own blue curtained room, barely gives you a second look because to him you're just another patient, still not yet an urban legend, as he says matter-of-factly that a doctor will be with you soon. And when he leaves, you touch the flimsy blue curtains surrounding you, realize that that's the only thing separating you from the more seriously injured, that the line between life and death really is quite fine, fine as those flimsy blue curtains surrounding you. And just as you're about to pull those curtains open, cross over to the other side, that's when the doctor and nurse arrive. And when you tell them why you're there, the nurse says, you know, I've only heard of this happening before, but I've actually never really witnessed it. And now here you are, some guy with a Q-tip stuck in his ear. I mean, you're like one of those urban legends. Wow, this is great. And when the nurse says those words, you realize they're the words you've been waiting to hear your whole life. The words that no longer make you feel like a bottom feeder down at the dark depths of the popularity food chain. Instead, those words leave you exalted, raised to new glorious heights as you enter into the pantheon of urban legends. Right up there with Altoids' Sexual AIDS, Attack of the Camel Spiders, Gerbils, and Richard Gere's butt. And before you can think of another urban legend you now accompany, the doctor's already grabbed the tweezers, plucked the cotton from your ear, and said, there, done. You can go home now. And you sit there stunned, almost wishing there'd been more drama, like putting you under the microscope, under anesthesia, into stirrups, into surgery, anything but sitting in this flimsy blue curtained-off room, the doctor showing you the tiny piece of cotton that may as well have been a bullet in your head for all the pain and fear to drawn up in you. But relax, don't sweat it, because you're an urban legend now. Right up there with junior high sex bracelets, the Eye of God Helix Nebula, Mr. Rogers is a Marine Sniper Navy SEAL. So you bolt out of the hospital, jump in your car, head back toward home as you float ecstatically above the ether of Friday night. Let's get it on electricity. You take the car up to 90. The engine screams louder than murder. Louder than great sex as you rocket past all your friends and other partiers, insomniacs, and romantics. Go ahead, drive faster. Take the car up to 100. Show everyone around you you're much wilder, crazier than the rest of the restless souls in this city. Show them you're a force to be reckoned with. Right up there with Hogzilla, the hairy hitchhiker, cyanide, lace deposit envelopes. Go ahead, you can do anything now. You're invincible. You'll live forever in people's imaginations. Be the story it's passed back and forth over the internet, over the office water cooler, over after work cocktails. Go ahead, live it, breathe it, be it, say it. You're an urban legend now.
Man, if I didn't have to hold this microphone, wait, I'm trying to put this microphone on here. That's so it's just so I can clap. That was amazing. And just let me just remind the audience that you're not, you weren't reading that off a piece of paper or anything. I mean, that was all, that was pure Rich Ferguson right there. Is it hard for you to, when you write something, do the words kind of write themselves into your brain, or do you have to put a lot of effort into memorizing them for performance?
Someone actually recently asked me that question after I did a performance. Like within the last week, someone asked me that question. Just last week, I was doing something downtown at the Art Walk. And for me, it's kind of a little combination of both. I think because they're my own words, there is a certain degree of them sort of writing themselves into my brain. But there is definitely a process that I go through. First of all, you know, when I perform, I loathe holding paper in my hand because I want to have my hands free to express myself and this and that, and just paper seems a little clumsy. But
and from the audience perspective, it makes a huge difference
exactly,
to see someone.
Exactly. So given that, I guess, you know, basically the way it starts is, you know, I'll get an idea for something. I'll start writing. Once I sort of get a rough idea, then... And I think a lot of this has to do with my musical background and playing drums and stuff. I'll then kind of read it out loud and let my ear be the editor as far as rhythm and stuff. And then once I go through that process, then we go into the memorization phase. And depending on how long or short the piece is, that could, you know, take a matter of hours or literally days or so. And what I'll do is I just really try to inhabit the piece. I'll walk around reciting the piece. I used to, a few years ago, I lived out in Santa Monica near the beach, and there were a lot of homeless people out there, and that was one that was one place where I truly felt at home because I could walk the streets there
just talking to myself.
And it was like, I'm home, you know. But
and now you can just put on a little Bluetooth or something and make
exactly.
it look like you're having a conversation.
Like a fake Bluetooth, and do that. But, you know, it's funny. A lot of people complain about L.A. traffic and spending so much time in their cars, but that's actually where I get a lot of work done, just sitting in my car and talking to myself. And
nice.
Yeah. And then basically I just try to get the piece to the point where it becomes a part of me. And so much so that... Even like especially a piece like Urban Legends, sometimes where it's kind of going along at a good clip. You know, there have been times where I'm doing a certain piece and I might have a little bit of a kind of a brain fart, and like I'm chugging up to a part of the piece and suddenly I kind of, like where am I, get a little lost in the piece. But I've sort of gotten to the point with, you know, some of my work where I've inhabited it so much that I can kind of get myself back on track with hopefully no one really.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the, that's sort of the actor's, has an actor has the same dilemma if you're doing a monologue on stage. And I've had this experience before on stage where it's like, you know, you're halfway through your monologue and then suddenly you just hit this wall and you can't just jump off the stage, you know? And so you start thinking, it doesn't help if you try to think of what the words are. The only thing that really seems to help is if you try to think about who you are, you know, what you're doing and what you're talking about. And that will help, you know, that helps you get back into it. I imagine the same thing happens with you, where it's like,
same thing.
If you try to think of what the next line is, that's going to probably screw you up. But if you just think about, okay, well, what am I talking about?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's it exactly. Because if you start focusing on, like, the individual words or whatever, it's just, they're moving by so fast.
Yeah.
It's just like, that'll just,
Well, Rich, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you. It's been
fantastic hanging out with you. And everyone should go pick up Where I Come From. Check it out, CD Baby or iTunes, or just go to myspace.com/Rich Ferguson. And I'm sure there's links and stuff there.
Oh, yeah.
And you have any upcoming shows in the near future?
May 5th. It's a little ways away, but May 5th, I'm going to be doing something at Tangier again, 9 p.m., Cinco de Mayo, doing something with Butch and Paul and Rich Mangiacaro will be doing a show.
All right, cool, man. Well, we'll sign off with one more track from this CD. Rich, thanks again for
coming in.
This will be available for download from myspace.com/thisisgood and isgoodmusic.com. And, of course, check back there for all the past, present, and future episodes of the show. You've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
With this kiss, there are revelations tattooed upon our lips. Revelations more easily read on account of this silent pact with recognition, where I'm beginning to see that we are slowly becoming healed. And this is not some medicine show down by the river. I am not faking it, mistaking it, trying to rake in the bucks from selling you some snake oil of unfortified conviction. Just listen. I offer you no forensic apology. This is my true astrology. Beneath the constellation of this revelation, my head is buzzing like dreaming bees, stinging me with needles of possibility. And suddenly I find myself unallergic to this disease of need, ready to move beyond that song I sang, that death chant of a soul enslaved, ready to move beyond that middle passage of fears, damnation, on my way to that emancipation proclamation, that rock and roll station of this body nation, singing, holy, holy, hold and hold me. And the things that happen to deny, to defy this, we're in the laboratory of childhood. We are sometimes made Frankenstein instead of frankincense. Yeah, I know it don't make sense. Still, I don't want to make this DNA sound DOA. So I'll light a candle for this newly born revelation. This elation with a holiness localized behind the eyes, a shine like fire telling stories the Bible never got quite right. A regenerative genesis where the muscle memory of love is bending, stretching, remembering movements enacted in passion that lead me to believe heaven is right here in the way we are with each other in this moment. Yeah. Yeah, I heard it through the grapevine, those spirits speaking to me in a double time, 100 proofs of truth saying that things are gonna be fine. Satchmo trumpet one. And if you're having any problem hearing it, tasting it in your mouth like spearmint, well, here, it's like I said before, score and 7 years ago. With this kiss, there are revelations tattooed upon our lips. Revelations more easily read on account of this silent pact with recognition, where I'm beginning to see that we are slowly becoming healed. Yeah. And I'm beginning to see that we
are slowly becoming year. Yeah, and I am beginning to see that we are slowly, slowly becoming year. And I'm beginning to see that we are slowly, slowly becoming here.